The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Right now, Texas has historically low unemployment, solid economic growth, and robust job creation. Some are calling this the Texas economic miracle, and the Texas business community says this didn't happen by accident. It came about because state leaders listened to them and created policies that they endorsed. And the business community isn't letting up. They will be meeting with the current set of lawmakers up in Austin about the latest business-friendly agenda that they're putting forth. And just because something is business-friendly doesn't automatically mean that it is unfriendly or even hostile to other sectors in our community. Just the opposite. There's a lot of common ground. But what do you want to see the business community lobby for? And how will this help Texans and the state's business climate? And you can call in and join our conversation. We'd love to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. And you can also email your questions and comments to thesource at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. The number again, 210-614-8980. We're joined this hour with Richard Perez. He is the president of the San Antonio Chamber of Commerce. John Agather is the 2019 chair of the San Antonio Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and J.D. Salinas is the Director of External and Legislative Affairs for AT&T and the Chair of Viva San Antonio Coalition. I welcome all of you. It's great to have you in the studio this afternoon.
Thank you, David. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And so, Richard Perez, President of the San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, talk about this agenda. Kind of give me just a quick summary. We'll get into deeper a little bit later.
Sure. So it is a multi-faceted agenda that deals with a ton of different things that are affecting the business community, some of them in a very negative way, and some of them we want to change for the benefit of this community. One of them in particular is public school funding. That is, I think, one of the governor's priorities, and has been a priority for us. As you know, we have a community that has its fair share of low to moderate income individuals, and the district that I represented when I was on the city council was 78% low to moderate income, and our schools need greater funding to be able to deal with the issues that low to moderate income students have to deal with, and dollars certainly help bridge that gap. So fixing school funding is a big priority for many in the state, so that's an important one. Economic development, you talked about it, the Texas miracle. There is a law in Chapter 312 of the Texas State Tax Code that allows communities like San Antonio to be able to abate taxes for businesses that want to locate in their community. That is up for sunset this fall, and so that is one of the ones that we are supporting as an opportunity to extend, to be able to give the city a tool, cities, counties, tools to be able to attract especially capital-intensive businesses to your community. So that's a big one for us. We've been pushing it for many years and supported it, and hopefully we'll be able to do the same thing. Proposition 1 was something that we all voted on as Texans a couple of years ago that allows for the dollars that come in from the oil and gas severance tax that goes into a special fund to be able to do more in the area of transportation. We want to make sure that that stays viable and stays strong and that we're using the money accordingly. And so that's one that we're supporting. So those are just three examples of big ones that I think if we get right, can really help the community in a very substantial way.
So transportation, if we don't have a functioning transportation system, people can't get to work, goods, services can't move around, it just gums up the works as far as a functioning business climate goes. John Agather with the San Antonio Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, what are some of your top issues?
Well, very similar to what the San Antonio Chamber's issues are that Richard just spoke about. For us, education is number one. We represent primarily small businesses, obviously Hispanics, and there are some traditionally stressed schools that we would like to argue for more funding, obviously more equitable funding throughout all the schools. I know that the Senate has passed SB3 right now that is approving $5,000 pay raise for the teachers. That's a great start. We would advocate that they would also include librarians, school counselors, people like that with it as well. We obviously would like to see small business, which is the tenderloin of our membership, be represented. We are encouraging that for contracts that are given out by the state, that they would consider increasing the number of local small minority women-owned businesses as a percentage of those contracts. Right now, it's not that high. We'd like it to go higher. And so those are the kind of the two things that we're really pushing at the top of the level. But we're also very interested in military veterans affairs, obviously. And we could talk later about border security and immigration. We've got pretty strong ideas about that. And obviously health and human services.
All right. And J.D. Salinas, with you're the chair of the Viva San Antonio Coalition. That's the coalition that will be going up to Austin and talking to lawmakers. And what do you think will be some of the top issues?
And you heard them by both the Hispanic Chamber and San Antonio Chamber. So our job as Viva chairs are to put the teams together and make sure that we have a San Antonio business community represented at the Capitol. So our theme this year is Entrepreneurial City, something we stole from the county judge, Wolf, in his state of the county. We're going to continue with that.
The theme is, again?
Entrepreneurial City.
Like entrepreneurial?
Yeah, entrepreneurial. Okay. Yeah, so we make sure that we have a business-friendly environment in San Antonio. So anything that helps us with that is something we're going to focus on. Anything from cybersecurity education or anything else that helps our lay the groundwork for future businesses to grow here in San Antonio.
I got a caller here, 210-614-8980, John. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd like to ask the business community to call for an honest economy. We should have an efficient and fair policy to account for externalities, so prices are showing the true costs, including the pollution costs and other environmental costs or depletion costs. And consumers can make better decisions. Profits of industry would align with the societal interests instead of sometimes be in conflict or always be in conflict if we allow externalities to persist.
All right, John, thank you for that. And John, you want to handle that?
So in terms of business investing back into the community, let me just say, I mean, from our standpoint in the Hispanic Chamber, we invest a tremendous amount into education because we believe that we're only as strong as our weakest links. So we're trying to reinvest there. We understand climate issues that are affecting the world right now. Obviously, CAP is one of the things that is being discussed right now. We're looking at it and trying to figure out what is the roadmap that we're going to have to take in order to meet some of the goals that they've put into that desire. Richard, do you want to add to that at all?
Yes. So the chamber right now, so I think we're talking about the city's climate action and adaptation plan. And so we're in the midst of taking a position on it right now. But our initial thoughts are that it's a plan that has a lot of far-reaching goals. But the challenge that we have right now is what are the costs of getting to those goals at the end of the day? Being carbon neutral by 2050 sounds great. But what does that actually mean to a business in San Antonio, Texas, that maybe is in the trucking industry or sells groceries or shines shoes? That's what we're trying to figure out.
All right, we're going to talk more about that when we come back from the break. We've got questions about what is the legislative agenda? How does this help the overall community as well as the business community? Looking for common ground. And also, if you think that there are some things that need to be reconsidered, we'll talk about that too. Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The business community has a loud and powerful voice when it comes to crafting public policy in the state capitol. The lawmakers frequently listen to them, not always, but frequently. And so it pays off to understand where they're coming from. How do they achieve this legislative agenda? How is that agenda going to impact the overall community and society, and you know, we all get a paycheck from somewhere, so if business isn't good, we're all going to feel the pinch. So the number to call in if you've got a question or comments is 210-614-8980. Richard Pettis, president of the San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, how do you arrive at this legislative agenda?
Well, so the chamber is made up of a variety of different committees and councils. So, for example, we have a military affairs council, and John talked about military affairs. And within that council, there are folks that are in the military or serve in the military in some capacity, or it could be folks that are retired from the military, and their focus is on how can we grow the military footprint in San Antonio, number one, or what are impediments to attracting more missions to San Antonio, for example. So they get together, and it is through that process of dialogue that we come up with that legislative agenda. So, for example, one of the things that we're pushing for in this legislative agenda in Austin is reauthorization of the DEAG, Defense Economic Adjustment Grants. And these are dollars that the state sets aside for communities like San Antonio or others that have military bases but need help with infrastructure, for example, to get into and out of the base. We have been successful in applying for dollars from the state that has now allowed us to put in some infrastructure through SAWS to be able to make sure that we're providing adequate water, particularly at Fort Sam Houston. You know, if they don't have enough water, then their missions go away. So little things like that and by the way, any city that in Texas that has a base can apply for these dollars. And so we're asking the state to put in $50 million in this pot so that there is a competition amongst cities that have bases that then can apply, and then we can then safeguard our mission. So that's just one example of how policy comes out.
And John Agather, with the San Antonio Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, how do your members communicate what you want to bring to Austin?
In very much the same way that Richard just highlighted. So we have a variety of committees as well. We have our own military affairs committee that just started this year. But longstanding, we've had a health committee. We've had committees that deal with education workforce development. There's a whole variety of them, and they sometimes mirror what is going on in the other chambers, and sometimes we're doing something that is a little bit different. But what I think, mirroring on what Richard was saying, at the end of the day, the business community wants a healthy community. We want to have an educated workforce, so it's important for us to spend the money in the right places. Infrastructure is a tremendous part of what we're arguing for as well, because San Antonio is projected to almost double in growth in the next 30 years. That is going to require some infrastructure needs that we need to start laying the bricks in for now. So we've tried to prioritize for this legislative session the things that we want to push, but at the same time, I think all of us together have very, very similar goals. And some of us, because of who our membership are, have more strength in certain areas with the legislature than others. So we work in cooperation and let one take a lead on one thing and one on another. So it's very much of a cooperative agreement between all the different entities in San Antonio.
On the phones, let's go to Sandra. The number is 210-614-8980. Sandra, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I want to say that I appreciate the things that the business and industry have done for education over the years. I've worked as a liaison with that community. But one thing I have wondered about is, can the business community get better involved individually with their employees? For example, a strong predictor for high school graduation is kindergarten attendance. Are they encouraging their employees to make sure their children get 10 hours of sleep at night, that they're eating healthy foods, that they have limited limited technology time, et cetera?
All right. Sandra, thank you for that. And I know it can be difficult with bosses trying to get too involved in their employees' lives at times, but you can provide resources. What do you think, Richard Pettis?
Well, so we promote important programs like school, of course, pre-K for SA, different things like that. But I think she's really getting pretty granular, and I don't know if generally businesses, go into that kind of depth with their employees. I mean, we talk about, of course, making sure that you're giving back to your community, an involved employee is a good employee that is involved in not only the business but in the surrounding
sure,
piece of
a lot
their
of
life.
Like a USAA, correct, I know the correct. Broadway Bank, a lot of these organizations here in town really encourage their employees to do put in volunteer hours.
Correct. Yeah. So I think in those respects we certainly do, but I think that was some pretty heavy, a deep dive there, and I don't know if
so well, I could say that from the Hispanic Chamber standpoint, that we have a lot of people that are small business. So for them to take time away to go to a high school football game or whatever, they're impactful when they're not there. That's the business. So we've worked very hard at trying to figure out the work home life balance. We talk about it a lot. I will say that part of what we try to do is do leadership programs so that people understand a little bit more about the necessity to have balance in their life and also where they can plug into San Antonio as a whole. We share an education program, a leadership program with the San Antonio Chamber called Leadership San Antonio that was started by the then Greater San Antonio Chamber of Commerce and is now run by both the Hispanic Chamber and the San Antonio Chamber together. So they get to see a kind of a broad brush of San Antonio. We on our own have Latina Leadership Institute, which is helping young women prepare for going on corporate boards, being appointed to public boards, and running for office. We have the Alex Briseño Leadership Development Program, which is more in the general business area, talking about the very things that she was talking about, which is more of a balanced approach to life. And we have others, but that's just as a top of mind.
So J.D. Salinas, Director of External Legislative Affairs for AT&T and Chair of the Viva San Antonio Coalition. What other chambers of commerce are involved in bringing together this program?
So I was going to say, between these two chambers, there's 2,000 businesses with 500,000 employees being represented here. And we get it as employees. For example, AT&T does a healthy work life, making sure that if our children are not healthy, then how are they going to learn in that classroom? So the other businesses that are being represented here are not only the San Antonio Chamber and the San Antonio Hispanic Chamber, but also we try to take ideas from the five entities. So it's the San Antonio Chamber, the Hispanic Chamber, the North Chamber, the South Chamber, and also our mobility group, which is called San Antonio Mobility Coalition. So when going back to your original question is how do you get all these ideas together to go have a good, successful day on March 5th, is you try to get all these ideas in one room and try to vet out what is the most important and most impactful. So today we'll have the last planning meeting to make sure that March 5th we're focused on representing our business advocacy and making sure that San Antonio has a big presence at the Texas Capitol.
I know we're talking about common ground, and there's a lot of common ground, but there's also some points where some friction points where some members of the community say we ought to go one way, and the business community says, no, that's not a great idea. And one of them might be the paid sick leave issue that we have here in San Antonio, and which will be coming up in the legislative session. And Richard Chavez, is that something that y'all have decided to weigh in on one side or the other?
Yes, we have. We are opposed to the city mandating pay and benefits to small businesses, large businesses for that matter, in this community. And so we opposed the city council taking or adopting the ordinance that forces paid sick leave on small businesses in San Antonio that don't have it already offered already. And in fact, one of our legislative priorities is to, at the state legislature, preempt the city's ability to mandate that on businesses in San Antonio.
But at the same time, looking at the paperwork I was given, you all talk about the need in order to protect the local governments from state directives, and that local governments know best when it comes to how to make sure that what to do locally. So
that's right.
How do you jive that?
Well, so that blanket statement is more along the lines of being able to invest in infrastructure, not having the city council that is elected to take care of police, fire, roads, libraries, that sort of thing, drainage, not to mandate to businesses what kind of benefits packages that they need to be offering employees. That is a decision that the business, and I come from a small business background. My father started a landscaping business when I was a child that, thank God, is still going very, very well. And so you can't mandate these things on small businesses. There, as John Agatha was just saying, it's a tough environment out there. And a small business, is working hard to keep the doors open and to hire people and to pay those people, but then to be able to mandate something on top of that, I think is counterproductive, certainly in our view as a chamber.
And we have the exact same view. Our concern is also where, from a standpoint of a municipality imposing basically labor laws, that brings up a lot of other issues in terms of who has overriding authority. We all operate under federal labor laws. So we mirror very similarly to the San Antonio Chamber, because certainly the paid sick leave that was passed by the city council here, it's kind of a one-size-fits-all. And in small business especially, things are very, very dynamic. And so the pressures on a small business are very different. I don't know of any medium-sized business, for sure, to large business here that doesn't already have paid sick leave.
So we do recognize, because businesses do provide this as a benefit, and it's good for the entire public health situation, that if people are sick, they stay home, and they don't come to work and make hamburgers and feed people when they are infected with the viruses. But so, Richard, how do you help those small businesses achieve the a way of handling this without having to, if we're not going to have a one-size-fit-all sort of a doctrine coming from City Hall, how do we deal with this?
Well, I think we deal with it by making sure that the environment is conducive to business growth, so that our economy is moving, it's humming, things are happening, houses are getting built, new people are coming in. You know, we've got students coming in to fill our schools at the community college and higher level. That's how we make for a robust opportunity. And the environment here in San Antonio, as you well know, David, is tight. That is, the employee market is tight. We are at some of the lowest unemployment levels that we've seen in many, many years. So businesses are struggling to attract employees. And so I can assure you that benefits are important for them to use as an attractor to employees. And so over time, I think that will be a part of the calculus that any business will make to attract and retain employees.
And J.D. Salinas, you're the chair of the Viva San Antonio Coalition. Are there sometimes things that San Antonio wants that other parts of this, other chambers of commerce across the state don't want? Are we coming in conflict with them?
Yeah, they do. And even within our own community, there's always a healthy discussion about how to best prepare our workforce. And so we're on Senate Bill 15 by Creighton. We're supporting his legislation to make sure that, you know, that there is no onerous rules in the local businesses, so they can make the businesses, we feel like businesses can make their decisions on some of these issues. Because if you get into paid sick leave, you might also get into tuition reimbursement programs and others that benefits that may affect a business or mid or large business like AT&T.
So you're concerned about a slippery slope. If this becomes passed, then what would happen then? We certainly know that people are calling for also a $15 an hour minimum wage, a living wage, and that's something, I guess, that, Richard, that y'all would probably not be in favor of.
That's right. Again, I think every business has their own profit margin that they develop based on costs of goods, being able to have a certain job, whether it's a government job or whether it's a private sector job, and mandating those at the outset, I think, makes it very, very difficult for a small business to compete.
So we're talking about the legislative agenda, the priorities for the business community. They're taking it up to Austin to meet with lawmakers. And what do you want to see them lobby for? What do you want the business community to make a priority? Do you have concerns that they're looking at their view and not everyone's view? Or what are the common ground areas that we can all agree on that this is a priority, taking care of our public schools, taking care of public transportation, taking care of any other public services that we all share and we know makes a better community and a better business community? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And the source is going to continue right after this quick break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Business is good in Texas. We know that because unemployment is at a record low. Job creation is high. People are moving to Texas in droves. And That's all because the business community has been able to voice, they have a strong voice in Austin, and they are able to craft policies with the lawmakers that can benefit the business community. But is that trickling down to everyone? What is the common ground between agendas, between the common working guy and the business community? You'd be surprised. It's not that far apart. You can call in. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. People are always concerned about property taxes, and I know that this is something that you're looking at with your legislative priorities, Richard Pettis, president of the San Antonio Chamber of Commerce. Where do you see the rub with property taxes? I imagine you have some ideas.
Yes, we do. There is not a single business person that I know that has not complained about the fact that their appraisal keeps going up, and many times precipitously in their minds anyway. So the ability for a business to be able to pay their taxes and then run their business gets more difficult with that, the appraisal going up and up and up. So there definitely needs to be some kind of relief for businesses and homeowners alike, for that matter. I think the challenge is what is the right rollback rate? So we're talking about a rollback rate. So Senator Betancourt has proposed a 2.5% rollback rate. Right now it's an 8% rollback rate. And so I think the concern is that in a city like San Antonio or any growing city, a 2.5% rollback rate will limit the city's ability to invest in infrastructure. And so we are in the process of trying to find, well, what is that happy balance in the middle? 2.5 is probably too low, and 8% is probably way too high. So where do we meet in the middle so that businesses can still do the things they do, so that they can employ people, provide paychecks, and continue the economic miracle that is Texas?
And John Agather from the San Antonio Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, you want to riff off that?
Well, I agree with everything Richard just said. I would add to it that I think from a homeowner standpoint, particularly for those of us that have small businesses, having that increase where you're both on your property taxes for your business and your home, and that it is a disproportionate tax increase, it makes it very difficult to have the kind of disposable income to reinvest into your business, to reinvest into your community, to send your children to college. I mean, it really has a long-lasting effect. So our concern is really for that working-class person that is trying to make it through life. We want to make sure that we keep the taxes in a proper state for growth.
The property tax situation, we're victims of our own success. People are moving to Texas and to San Antonio in droves. This creates great demand for the housing stock that we have now that we're developing. Prices are continuing to rise. If you want to go to places where they don't have a property tax problem, that's where places where people are fleeing in droves. And so is this something we should just, how do we solve our property tax problem, without, strangling the goose that lays the golden egg, Richard?
Sure. Well, and I think if you look at your property tax bill, so let's say your residential property tax bill, the majority of it actually goes to pay for your school district. So your school district tax, the city's portion of the tax is about 31-32% of the 100%. 50+% is the school district. And so that takes us back to the first thing that we talked about, and that is school finance reform. If the state could help residents with that piece of the property tax, that would lower the burden on the property tax bill, and then that would help. So when there is a property tax increase, it's much smaller because the burden that's coming to help pay for school districts is lower. Does that make sense?
Sure does.
And the city has not raised its portion of the tax in years and years and
10 years at least. Yes, and but we see that, as across the state, people are coming at this in different directions. J.D. Salinas with the Viva San Antonio Coalition, is this something that lawmakers, they've all heard this. Yeah. What more can you tell them that they haven't heard before?
Well, the same thing. The impact will be, for example, if you localize the issue, right, all politics are local. For example, in San Antonio, if this would have been already instituted, you would have had maybe 800 police officers that would not have been funded. So those are the things we need to realize. And so we need to find that happy medium, like both members here with me said, and Richard and John, and I agree. Is 2.5 the answer? That may be too low. 8% is too high. So we really need to look at it. And so we really need to localize the issue. And what is your local impact when you do that? And so in my 20 years of government experience before AT&T, I knew that you have to have the right tools to attract business, to educate the workforce, and making sure that you have the proper infrastructure for future growth. And so these are the issues that locally they need to be looked at.
And workers got to have money in their pockets. They can go spend it. You know, they can go to a Spurs game, and they can, and buy the products and services that businesses here in San Antonio are trying to provide.
That's exactly right. Everybody wants to have a good quality of life. Everybody wants to take their kids to the movies or to the Riverwalk and just walk around and buy a burger, right? So I think I will say that I think there's a good, strong possibility that a deal will be had on the property tax issue. And so I'm very hopeful. There's a couple of coalitions, one with the big city chambers of commerce and with the big city mayors. And so I'm seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. Of course, it's still early in the process, but I think that a deal will be had, certainly.
Okay, let me go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. What do you want to see happening with the business community and their legislative agenda as they go up to Austin? Isabel is on the line. Hi, Isabel. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. I just kind of had a question going back to a few minutes ago. I was wondering more if they could talk more about what's so hard about raising the kind of minimum wage or the lower positions wage, because all the benefits packages, in my experience working for organizations, especially larger ones, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. So, I mean, I want to know, like, why can't those resources go into raising the wage more, I guess, if they could have that in mind.
Okay, Isabel, thank you for that. Great call. So we know that the economy is humming along. The job market is tight, but wages have not kept up. And so I don't know if Richard Pettis with the Chamber of Commerce, if you can help me understand why it is that way. And we know that most businesses do not pay minimum wage. They pay much better than
minimum wage. Much higher than minimum wage. That's right.
You'd be really hard-pressed to find some place that's going to pay someone minimum wage. But even then, you know, why is it that it's so hard to get by? If you're working a full-time someplace, you're still could be not getting by.
Yes. Well, so it's a challenge. The business market is tight. So there is a ton of competition, right?
Margins are tight.
That's the point. The margins are tight. So the amount of profit that one business can make on a contract is getting squeezed because there's so much competition. And that's the challenge, right? Everybody, every business owner wants to max the opportunity for their employee to be successful. But they also need to make sure that the business stays open, that the doors stay open, that they continue to provide a good or service. And that's the rub. That's the
And there's also the
balance.
Risk that's involved when you're a business owner. I mean, you're putting your entire livelihood, your life on the line when you put up that sign saying open for business. So that's also has to be rewarded and respected.
That's exactly right. Being an entrepreneur is not easy. Starting a business from zero is not easy, and the risk is huge. I mean, someone could go bankrupt if their business doesn't go well. So that's the balance, right? Someone starts a business because they have a goal, they have a vision, and that vision includes those employees too. Without those employees, the business wouldn't exist either. But it has to be a balance, and I think, as you've just said, the market is pushing wages up just because it's so tight. And so businesses are trying to max their opportunity to pay their employees as much as they can and include various benefits. So that's really where it kind of got the rub is.
You want to have a market-driven economy. That is the most efficient system there is. I grew up in Mexico. I was born and raised in Mexico. I've seen what abject poverty looks like. And I've also lived under a system there where things were mandated trying to control markets that actually hurt the country rather than helped it. So that balance that Richard is talking about between having the right kind of laws in effect that still allow for growth and for a very good quality of life. I mean, we're all working toward a more perfect union. We're always trying to do that and to find a more equitable solution. But at the end of the day, I think the market-driven economy is the way to go. I mean, and we're proving that to the world because even the communist countries copied us.
Right, but Mexico did not have a middle class. It had a high upper class and a lot of poor people.
It depends what area you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about the 1960s, Mexico had a very healthy, growing middle class. And they had market-driven kind of reforms going on. And then in 1970, you had a very kind of top-down management coming into the country that mandated to everything, and they were nationalizing industries right and left, and it killed the middle class. And then what you're describing is what happened.
So a healthy middle class is essential for our type of economy that we have. You got to have people who can make enough money, who can buy new cars, buy appliances, buy homes.
It's essential for any society anywhere to have a healthy middle class. And you can't operate with just one gilded class that controls and owns everything through multi-generations. The difference between us and, say, England, where the landed gentry were controlling everything, is that we have regeneration. We give that opportunity to have people have a stab at economic independence.
And so as you come up with this legislative priorities, this wish list that you bring to the lawmakers, do you think about these things? Is that something like you realize it just can't always be about let's squeeze the last dollar out of the economy? It's also we have to have a healthy economy in order so that we all do well. John?
Well, I will say this, and having come to San Antonio from Mexico, I think San Antonio is an extraordinarily well-run city, and it has been for a very long time. And the reason is because it was stuck out in the middle of nowhere for a long time, and people had to get along. So we do work with each other here, and that is a remarkable thing for a major city.
All right, we're taking another break. We got some calls on the board. We'll get you on the air. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. The local business community's legislative priorities, they're going to be taking it to Austin in a couple of weeks, and they're going to be getting lawmakers reacting to this. They're looking for better schools, better roadways, better opportunities for all of us. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the San Antonio business community's legislative priorities. They'll be taking it to Austin to talk to our lawmakers for this legislative session. 210-614-8980. Sarah has called in. And Sarah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to give my opinion on the minimum tax, minimum wage.
Uh-huh.
My point with it is, I own a very small business. I've got usually 6 to 10 employees. I own Mission Adventure Tours here in San Antonio. We run kayak trips. My lowest wage starts at $10 an hour. So if I can be a super small business here in San Antonio and be able to pay my lowest employee a minimum of $10 an hour, there's really no excuse that we can't up the minimum wage.
All right, Sarah, thank you for that call. And that sounds like fun, taking a kayak trip. You know, it sounds like something worth checking out. Let's go to Beth. Beth, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, yes. I was just calling because I do personally believe in paying a fair share. And I think that, you know, as far as I understand, living in Texas, it's one of the hardest states to live if you earn a minimum wage. It's practically impossible. And as a teacher, you know, a lot of us do want there to be more income for the districts, but you can't get something for nothing. So either you increase property taxes or you increase business taxes. And it's not to say that, you know, Walmart, Target, McDonald's, and those large multi-corporate industries can afford to pay $15 an hour. So if there's a will, there's a way.
All right, Beth, thank you for the call. Richard Perez, two calls there talking about we need to pay people more. I think really that your issue is how do we get there, right?
That's right. And so Sarah, who pays her employees, and by the way, congratulations, Sarah, on running a small business. It is not easy. That is a big deal. But she's already paying her employees $10 an hour. And I can assure you that there are a whole bunch of other businesses just like her that have to pay their employees above minimum wage, whether that's 10, whether that's 12, whether that's not 9.75, because the market requires, it dictates that that's what you have to do. So I think, but raising it up to 15, I don't know if Sarah could do it at 15. You know, again, that's her business model, and so she's doing the max that she can. But I don't know very many businesses that are actually at the minimum wage. They're way above that.
So one of the issues that you all bring up that you want to promote here on our legislative agenda is cybersecurity. And J.D. Salinas, can you talk about that? Why is this something that jumps out?
I think the biggest thing that people don't realize, and I, you know, moving in San Antonio, realize is that we have the biggest presence of cyber assets, second only to Washington, D.C., in that area, in Maryland. And if the it's important because we need to educate our future workforce from the school grade levels to make sure they're prepared and our workforce is prepared so we can keep attracting those technology companies to San Antonio. So I think one of the things that we're going to try to drive, and we'll open on March 5th with a panel to talk about the cyber presence in San Antonio and the investment and technology coming to San Antonio, make sure we're prepared for future workforce.
So everyone knows about San Antonio and the Air Force. San Antonio also has the Chair Force. These are people who are looking at computers and monitors, and they're on the cybersecurity, and they're fighting the war in cyberspace. And this is something that San Antonio has developed tremendous expertise in. And not only that, it's a military issue, but it's also the business community needs that as well. So Richard Perez, what can you do to spur that along?
Well, we can, first of all, tell a story. If people start understanding that there is a critical mass of cybersecurity professionals in San Antonio and they want to be in that industry, they can come here. We also need to promote the fact that University of Texas at San Antonio has the number one cybersecurity program in the entire United States. That's another attractor. And by the way, all of the other universities also have very strong programs in some way, shape, or form in the cybersecurity area. So we're training the young people. We've got the military here. We've got NSA, which is another critical component to the federal government.
Cyber Command.
The Cyber Command, that's right. So I think it's incumbent upon us to see the opportunity and to grow it. And we're working really hard with our institutions of higher learning, including the Community College District, to make sure that as young people are coming out of high school, they can go right into those opportunities and get a good job, get a certification, and then go right into work and be able to provide for their families.
So as all of our gizmos in our homes become more connected, we have to make sure that they're talking to the right people, you know. John Agather with the San Antonio Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, you mentioned earlier, I want to go back to it now, the immigration and border issues. So where are y'all on that?
Well, obviously, kind of the rhetoric that has been flying around about immigration and the caravans, from a Latino standpoint, there is a cynicism that is in some of those arguments that is tinged with discrimination, so we don't like that at all. But in terms of the wall itself, obviously we're opposed to that, but we are opposed, we are in favor of having smart technology and such as surveillance cameras or heat motion detectors. Even having working radios on the border would help a lot. An actual physical barrier in some cases is not even possible. So I would also say one other thing is that we really don't have an immigration crisis in this country right now. The Mexican Revolution and the exportation of so many people out of the country at that point, that was an immigration crisis. Right now, we're faced with primarily people from Central America that are escaping horrific conditions. And so we have to have a balanced immigration reform system that takes into account workforce needs that this country has and also takes in the humanitarian needs that people that are escaping these oppressive regimes can then come and find safe haven in the United States. We understand all the getting in line issue and getting citizenship, but there's got to be a happy medium here where we can have comprehensive immigration reform.
So the United States needs labor. Frequently that labor has turned, some businesses, maybe agribusiness, has turned towards labor that is here without authorization. Is the dream to try to figure out a way that we can have access to the labor that we need in a legal way that's dignified, respectful, and sustainable, building a wall in heated, ugly rhetoric? I don't know if that's how you get there, Richard Perez.
Well, so of course this is a national issue. So even though the state of Texas has an important role to play, it's really something that needs to happen in Washington, D.C. But I would agree that one of the opportunities that we have and we see is the ability for people to come to this country legally through a visa, a work visa program, stay here for 6 months, 5 months, 10 months, whatever the length of their stay needs to be via that visa, and then go right back to their country of origin. It has been working for many, many years, but for a variety of reasons, the availability of those visas has gotten smaller, and not just unskilled labor, but skilled labor, folks that have technical degrees or degrees in cybersecurity, for example, or other things. And so we are at a crisis point, I think, in our country. We really need to get our arms around comprehensive immigration reform and be serious about the solution, because it's there and the needs for employees are there.
So we had Bob Perry of Perry Homes, who was active for a long time in state politics, mm-hmm. and he was a voice of reason towards the need, you know, being humanitarian towards workers coming up from across the border. And we've lost him when he passed away, and it seems like since we've lost him, the conversation in Austin has gotten not as nuanced. And are you trying to bring that to Austin when you go up there, John? Are you trying to make people aware of the reality?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely made my own personal opinions known to legislators and people that work in state government that when you have the kind of rhetoric that's flying out of Washington right now surrounding this issue that is very much targeted against Hispanics, that is a negative direction to go. We understand the need for sovereignty. We get it. But there is a way to do a guest worker program that will be far better than what we have right now. The system doesn't allow for somebody to come over here legally to work for a temporary period of time in a meaningful way. And we used to have that. We don't anymore.
And J.D. Salinas, what do y'all plan on telling lawmakers about immigration reform?
We have talked, and we did in via the trip in San Antonio, because it's more of a federal issue, but we are talking on the same talking points as Texas Border Coalition. The Texas Border Coalition has recommended to making sure in investing more in smart technology, aerostat, boats on the river, and cutting the Carrizo cane. Things that make sense so the Border Patrol can do their job. You also need to realize that the hard drugs are coming through the port of entries. Yeah. Their own U.S. Customs Oversight Committee has said that. So knowing that, we need to invest more in the blue uniform instead of the green uniform, the Customs and Border Protection, so that they can have the technology to do the job and catch the drugs, the hard drugs that are coming to the port of entry.
And real quickly, Richard, because we're running out of time, tell me more about the need for improvements to the Texas State School. Why is that a priority item?
The Texas State School, well, it is an asset for us here in San Antonio, and you know, there are not very many of them in the state, and they deal with a population that's in need, and so.
So these are people who are dealing with developmental issues,
yes.
Also mental issues. This is a facility that we have in San Antonio that can provide wide-ranging health care for these folks and can help keep them locally.
That's right.
And we want to make sure that the facility is state-of-the-art.
Well, and it's really old.
And it's a job provider.
That's exactly right.
And also health care, that's also something that needs to be addressed. And, like, really quickly, J.D. Salinas, what are you going to be asking for that?
One of the things is make sure that lawmakers in Austin realize that if we don't have a healthy workforce, they cannot learn STEM, that we cannot prepare our economic development future, and making sure they're prepared to learn, make sure that they're ready. So health care is very important, as you know, and we need to make sure that it's affordable and that we can make sure and leverage our federal funds here in Texas as everybody else in the United States has.
Wow, so you guys have a really thick list when you go up to Austin. I'm sure you'll be targeting specific lawmakers when it comes to what they address in their committee assignments and all that. I want to thank all of our guests, Richard Pettis, president of the San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, John Agather, who is the 2019 chair of the San Antonio Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and J.D. Salinas, who is the director of external and legislative affairs for AT&T and the chair of the Viva San Antonio Coalition. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks so much for tuning us in.